You are listening to the number one cult film podcast in Texas, the Skeleton Factory Podcast. And here's your host, my number one nizzle for shizzle, Adam Hester.
Thank you, text-to-speech Snoop Dogg. Hello, and welcome to the Skeleton Factory Podcast.
Episode 67.
This is Adam coming to you from Austin, Texas. And today, I'll be taking a look at the 2017 film Drib, directed by Christopher Borgli. I've covered a Christopher Borgli film not that long ago on episode 62. I reviewed his 2022 film Sick of Myself. That was a double billing with the movie Shakedown, which I highly recommend. Shakedown if you like 80s action films, if you like Lethal Weapon, if you like anything where there's gruff men with guns shooting bad guys in a major city, then you'll love Shakedown. It stars Sam Elliott. This is around the time of Roadhouse, Sam Elliott, and also Peter Weller. And this actually was made just after RoboCop, so it was right in that period of time. There's great shots in that movie of 42nd Street, the old 42nd Street between 7th and 8th Avenue in New York City. But yes, Sick of Myself. Let's see. Great movie. Recommend it. It's, I actually kind of want to rewatch it. Maybe tonight, perhaps. But Sick of Myself is about a young woman in Norway who is very jealous of her boyfriend's new rise to stardom in the art world. She begins taking a prescription drug that, if taken in overabundance, will cause the user of the drug, it'll cause their skin to grow these hideous sores and will permanently leave the user's skin scarred and deformed. And she does this to get attention and pity from others. The type of attention and, she wouldn't normally get, seeing as she has no discernible talent or personality at all. But did I mention that Sick of Myself is a comedy? Yes, it's actually hilarious. And one thing I really like about Christopher Borgli, he really nails sort of the awkward idiosyncrasies of modern people. You know, his movies are always sort of centered around affluent young people who are welded to their phones, who produce nothing of value. Okay. Everyone in his films are, his characters are these like self-important, self-absorbed, bumptious children. And I love it. I love it. I love that kind of world, that sort of clean, sterile world where no one really has any problems and all your needs and wants to a certain extent are right at your fingertips. Yet everyone is completely miserable and insecure. So again, Sick of Myself. I love it. It's, and like the movie we're going to take a look at today, it's just cutting edge satire, the sort of mocking of fleeting internet fame and big business advertising that wants to appeal to said bumptious children to hawk some cold carbonated speed water, energy drinks, to be specific. So let's crack open a can of Drib and see if this mockumentary about a true story gives us wings. The opening text hits the screen, and it says, quote, In 2014, a friend of mine got involved in the marketing of an energy drink. He fooled an advertising agency to base an international campaign on him. I asked if I could make a film based on his story. He agreed on one condition. He had to play the lead himself. End of quote. So we're introduced to Amir Asgharnizad, an Iranian-born and Norwegian-raised performance artist and comedian and friend of director Christopher Borgli. Now, he plays himself in this movie, okay? So, and how do I describe Amir? Amir is sort of a fan of Andy Kaufman, if that gives you any indication of his... of where his artistic brain is. And Amir's performances, performance art. Amir's performance art lies somewhere between, I'd say, like Sacha Baron Cohen and Jackass. Okay, it's kind of floats somewhere in the middle there. Now, a lot of what he does is sort of pranks on unsuspecting people that may never know the setup or punchline of the joke that he's trying to tell. The joke is everyone responding to the confusion of whatever the contrived scenario is. That's the joke. It's sort of the joke is just for him, really, to amuse himself. There is one scene in the very beginning, and is this real? Is this not real? Not really sure, but it doesn't really matter, really. But at some point, there was like Amir graduated from, I'm assuming, art school. But his sort of final project was he rented out an art gallery, and he set up sort of like this IKEA furniture, like kitchen kind of setup and thing. And he had people sort of come in and graffiti this sort of IKEA furnished room. And at this event, he also served GHB to those in attendance. Now, he told them there was GHB. I'm pretty sure. He's like, come in. Come to the art gallery. Come into this... you know, if you go to IKEA, like, you can spend like nothing and, you know, have some, you know, some shelving or a coat rack or a chair or an inexpensive desk. And really for very cheaply, you can kind of furnish your home. But you can also like blow some serious money there, especially if you're like redoing your kitchen and stuff like that, or maybe putting in an island in your kitchen or something. But he has this whole setup in this art gallery, and he's just pouring glasses of GHB mixed with, I'm guessing, soda to people. And you see people passing out all over the place and leaning up against walls. And like GHB, from what I understand, is the date rape drug. The drug that people give to people they want to rape, because it's easier to rape people when they're not fighting back. So, you know, I imagine that, you know, like Bill Cosby type stuff. But basically, that was the art exhibit. But here was the thing, right? The police got wind of this. I guess this was in the media somewhere. They got wind of it. Police show up and they arrest sort of Amir's kind of co-conspirator in this this project, but the thing was, is all the people who drank the GHB and were passing out everywhere and fainting and nodding out and everything, all of that was fake. Okay, the whole thing was like everything was a faked thing. There was no GHB, so if that's kind of the type of performance art that Amir does. Okay. I also saw this program, I believe, in Norway. I couldn't find anything with English subtitles, and obviously I don't speak or understand Norwegian, but I can get the point of the show. There was this show where he was interviewing, I'm presuming to be a director of a film that came out, and he was interviewing the director, but before he went into the room to interview the director, him and this other guy rolled up a mirror's sleeve, because he's wearing like a suit. He rolled up the sleeve and he wrapped a dog shock collar around his bicep, and then pulled his sleeve down and put on his sport coat. And then he goes in the room and introduces himself and starts interviewing this director. And during the interview, the guy in the other room, it's like a split screen, you can see the guy in the other room, and he's watching the interview on a monitor. He's randomly shocking a mirror during the interview. I guess the thing is Amir has to try to not sell that he's being electrocuted because the director that he's interviewing doesn't know that he's being electrocuted. He has no idea what's wrong with him. So he'll be talking with the guy and Amir will be asking questions. And then suddenly Amir will just, he'll just jolt in his chair like, and the guy's like, what is wrong with this guy? Maybe he has like a speech impediment or some type of neurological disease or something like that. So, you know, and I thought that was very funny. Even though we didn't have a common language. The common language was sort of this, you know, I could have turned the volume off, you know, and just watched it. And it would have been sort of the, almost like a silent film type of performance art, just, well, for TV in that case, but. Yeah, I looked up some of Amir's stuff and it's funny. It's pretty funny. It's fun. I mean, it's fun when someone's willing to have themselves, they're willing to endure bodily harm for laughs. It's, you know, I applaud things like that. Things like that amuse me. But in the case of Drib, Amir's, you know, performance art in the film Drib it's staged viral videos from this short, unassuming guy picking fights with larger, more physically imposing and capable men and getting his ass kicked. Now, Amir's not a big dude, okay? He's not like a boxer or knows how to wrestle or anything like that. Like, he's just this kind of small statured comedian kind of guy. But so in the movie, Amir gets sort of internet famous from making these viral videos of him provoking fights on the street with larger with larger people and getting his ass kicked. So for this, Amir is contacted by an ad agency in the United States about working with him on a project. Amir flies out from Norway to Los Angeles, and it's set up in there's a good setup in the beginning of the movie. Like, you can really kind of, sink your hooks in, and the setup to the movie is really, really solid before the actual movie kind of kicks off. And so it's explained that to avoid any legal problems, it's explained by, I'm assuming it's the director, Christopher Borgli's voiceover, that all the names in the movie have been changed except for Amir's. The name of the ad agency who hired Amir was changed, and the actual name of the energy drinks company was changed for legal for legal reasons. So the name of the energy drink company is called Drib, but I think it's probably Red Bull. Red Bull is mentioned in passing in the film, and I'm just going to assume that it was Red Bull that is supposed to be the company that is unmentioned in this film. So Amir goes out to Los Angeles, and he goes to the ad agency's office, and where we're introduced to sort of the brainchild of this entire thing. It's this creative director of this ad agency who wants to use Amir's internet, his new internet fame, to promote Drib, the energy drink. And it's the character of Brady Thompson, played by actor Brett Gelman, who you may remember as the character of Murray Bauman from Stranger Things. Okay, he's like the conspiracy dude with like big glasses, balding. I watched at least that much of Stranger Things. I did watch enough to see the Murray Bauman character, but I really didn't watch anything of season 3 or 4 and 4. I guess we're at season 4 of Stranger Things at this point. So, but Brett Gelman's character, his Brady Thompson character, is easily the best character in the movie. He's just like standout performance, and he's hilarious. And so Amir's flown out to Los Angeles to take a meeting with Brady and his marketing team, and they want Amir to continue making these viral videos where he fights strangers on the street, but using the huge audience and the media attention that Amir has amassed, right? They want him to keep doing what he's doing, but start inserting Drib advertising in the form of product placement in his videos. Okay, so there's going to be this blending of reality and advertising. Okay, that's sort of Brady's idea of like this is almost like the subversive advertising of, you know, I don't know, what's a good example of like a viral internet video? What was it? The lady on the airplane who stormed off, you know, that motherfucker isn't real. That lady. What if like everyone in the plane was like watching her freak out on the plane and they were all drinking Red Bull? Okay. It'd be like that. You know, it's sort of this subversive advertising where it's like you watch the video thinking like, oh, it's a lady freaking out on a plane. You know, it's like this viral video, but subconsciously you're seeing Red Bull in that video. That's kind of what Brady is thinking with Drib energy drink and Amir's sort of internet famous videos that he's acquired. So the problem is all of Amir's street fight videos are fake. Now, all the guys he fought / beat up in these videos were actors, but the ad agency, Brady and all his people, they don't know that. So now Amir risks getting beat up for real to make content advertising for this company, which he seems willing to do. But Brady explains that there's hesitation from Drib's legal team having a spokesperson being physically like physically attacking random people on the street, which makes sense. You know, I don't think any large company would want that type of publicity of paying someone to physically assault people on the street. That's not a good look. You could probably actually get away with it today, actually, the way I don't know, the way that the political climate on the streets is nowadays. I mean, this was 2017, but you could probably get away with slapping some, slapping some ads, stickers on protesters' helmets or T-shirts, or you could probably get away with that today and it'd be fine. So Brady says they will have to do staged fights for the meantime until he can hopefully sway the company to agree to make real fight videos, which, I mean, in retrospect, just saying that and having watched the film a couple times, like, it seems unlikely. But let's see. Amir has this constant need to troll and sabotage any situation for his own amusement, such as there's a scene where there is a fake fight rehearsal. Okay, so they go into the this building where there's, you know, a camera crew and stuff, and there's like this dopey fight choreographer guy who comes in to choreograph the fake fight. And during this rehearsal, the actor who's playing the random, quote unquote, random guy in the street that Amir is supposed to fight, a black man. So they realize at some point that a choreographed movie looking fight is not going to seem convincing. So they're like, okay, let's just kind of freeform this. Okay, let's workshop this a little bit. So in order to inspire feelings of rage, they sort of tap into method acting territory. Okay, and I mean, it's highly offensive. I have one hand on my hip and I'm wagging my other hand. I'm wagging my finger right now. It's highly offensive. Okay. So in order to get this black actor gentleman who seems like he's a pretty mellow, relaxed type of guy, and he's not an aggressive guy. So they're like, well, how can we kind of, just in the moment, how can we, we're acting here. So how can we get you mad and whatever? And so basically, the scene goes where, Amir ends up smashing the guy's phone and calling him the N word. Yeah, but it's hilarious. Okay. So we also get some, very humorous scenes between Amir and actor Adam Pearson, who's playing himself. And you may recognize Adam Pearson from the movie Under the Skin, the Scarlett Johansson movie, where she's like an alien. Okay. And he's the character of the deformed man. And in the movie, he's a deformed man. You know, Under the Skin, by the way, directed by Jonathan Glazer, who also directed Sexy Beast with Ben Kingsley and Ray Winstone. That's a good double feature, by the way. But so if you look up Adam Pearson, okay, he has an actual deformed face. He has like a medical condition where his face is over time sort of morphed into this, I don't know, this kind of nightmarish, large looking face like kind of thing, but it's almost Elephant Man-ish in a way. So you can look him up and you'll see what I'm talking about, and that's how he actually looks in real life. But he's really quick and witty, and that sort of juxtaposition between how he looks and his sort of how he thinks of himself as a working actor, okay, because he's playing himself. Those scenes between him and Amir are really good. There's moments of fourth wall breaking that may or may not be Amir going off script or just plain sabotaging a scene. It reminds us this is a movie, and hiring Amir to play himself may have been a mistake on director Christopher Borgli's part. And there is an emphasis put by the director through sort of voiceover that, you know, that hiring Amir may have not been the smartest move because he's so kind of difficult to work with. He's sort of always kind of fucking around. So, and this is, I mean, this goes all the way to the end of the movie. And then, so the movie ends with Borgli and Amir bickering about the final scene of the movie where Amir parts company with Brady and his creative team at the ad agency. Okay. So he has this kind of meeting with them in this boardroom, and you know, they're basically like, we're canceling this entire thing. The whole ad campaign is going to be canceled. So basically they're telling him he's fired. So, and from Amir's perspective, Amir, the character in the movie, not actual Amir in real life. I mean, well, I guess it would be more like Christopher Borgli's perspective, since Amir in the movie is Christopher Borgli's interpretation of Amir reacting to the events in the movie. Okay, yeah, that's better. That makes more sense. So after 5 days, he's in Los Angeles. Okay, and those 5 days are sort of bookended by a 13 and a half hour flight going to and from Norway. I've checked how long it takes to fly Norway from LA. So from the perspective of Amir, it's like 13 and a half hour flight from Norway to Los Angeles, 5 days in Los Angeles, trying to get this campaign off the ground, and it's just not really gelling. And then having to fly back after being told, like, oh yeah, this entire campaign's canceled and you probably won't get your full payout and yada, yada, yada. Brady informs Amir that the Drig campaign has been canceled and they'll have to part ways. Now, Borgli wanted Amir to storm out of the office, slamming the door on the way out. And when he slams the door, it's made of glass, just smashes and breaks. But Amir doesn't want to portray that scene that way. His thought is, well, that's not how it actually happened. I didn't storm out of the room and smash the door and walk out like a badass. He's like, I just, you know, it was a thing where they're like, sorry, the campaign's been canceled, but thank you for coming out. And he said, oh, you know, thank you for your time. It was nice meeting you all, yada, yada, yada. And then he just got up and left. Okay. So Amir's like, why not just have a scene where I get up, thank everyone for their time and leave? And Borgli says, since Amir has been mostly a sort of passive lead character the whole movie, that having a big fuck you, I'm out moment would narratively be more satisfying for the audience. But but that's not the point. You know, Amir's comedy style doesn't necessarily have the audience in mind. So the movie ends with a very stylized series of shots of Amir dressed head to toe in Drib branded streetwear, drinking Drib enthusiastically, and text appears on the screen and tells us that Amir was compensated for his story and starring in the movie, and that we, the viewing audience, can buy products seen in this film at drib.us, which isn't a real website. I checked. It's the meta quality of this movie about fake products, but you can buy the fake products on a website that doesn't exist. And if you do check to see if the website is real, then you are just as susceptible to product placement as anyone else. That's sort of the point. And the John Mouse music swells. fade to black, credits, the end. And that was Drib from 2017, directed by Christopher Borgli. And I like this movie, and I do recommend it. And I would say it's probably, I don't feel like it's as full of a movie, you know, with characters who have arcs, you know, things like that, and plot and things like that, and tension and drama and things. There's not a lot of that in this movie, but for me, it works anyhow. And now I can see this story being like a TV show, but I feel like it would be really annoying. So part of me would really be interested in seeing this story fleshed out in maybe like a mini series, you know, stretched over, you know, a handful of episodes, you know, because I would like to see more of the Brady character. You know, I'd like to see more of Amir's story in greater detail. And I do enjoy Christopher Borgli's directing style and all the kind of crazy characters that inhabit it. And his characters are very natural to me. Like, they seem like real people. But not just real people. Like, there's sort of the quirkiness, the very subtle quirkiness, the awkwardness of people. You know, those little pauses that people have while talking really tell you a lot about what's going on in people's heads. You know, it's like when you talk to anyone, like, you know, you're at a restaurant and you're talking to your waiter, you're at a coffee shop and you're talking to whoever's behind the counter, or, you know, you have to, you know, like a coworker, or it's just like there's an awkwardness to somebody that you can't be completely forthright with. Okay. Because you have to deal with them in sort of like a business transaction type of way. And there's a lot of that in this movie, which I do love. I love sort of fake corporate people whose sort of their interactions are just laced with sort of cringy HR safe like wordage. And like technical industry jargon, you know, just I find that really fascinating, even though I detest it. I think it's gross. I think that turning people into this sort of like anti-person, this person who just speaks in like, you know, technical business, you know, quote unquote professional, you know, jargon laced speech. Like, I just find it, it's like watching an android in a movie or something. You know, it's like listening to C-3PO or something. You know, it's like he's speaking with like a human voice, but the way he speaks and how he speaks doesn't seem real. It seems like, well, an AI-generated Snoop Dogg voiceover, for instance. But I really enjoy it. Like, Brady Thompson's character is hilarious in this film. He's so sort of uptight and insecure and putting on this sort of, like, just nervous, and he's a nervous wreck of this sort of like control freak, you know, bundle of energy character. And I if anything, I would love to just see a show about that guy. Like, if there was a Brady Thompson TV show that sort of in the Drib universe, I don't even need Amir to be there really, but if I was just like, okay, I would just want to see this guy do his thing as this creative director of an ad agency. because it would be sort of like, I don't know. I mean, it would probably, if it was a TV show, it would just come off as like a nerdy hipster version of Entourage, but without the Entourage. But I don't know. I think that something like that could be interesting. Now, Christopher Borgli hasn't done like a ton of movies. He's done a lot of short films and stuff like that. And I'm not exactly sure how many feature-length films he's done. But I did see Sick of Myself last year. And I like that movie a little bit more. You know, it's more of a character study. It's more of, you know, movies where you have to, your main character is sort of a despicable person. And in the case of Sick of Myself, it's sort of this narcissistic, self-centered person who just wants attention and unearned fame. You know, I don't know. I think Sick of Myself is a lot more complete of a film. And I do say watch Drib. Totally watch Drib. Like, especially if you've seen Sick of Myself, you know, because it's just Christopher Borgli's directing style I really enjoy. So yes, that was Drib. Check it out. I recommend it. Ooh. I did want to mention that I wonder if Drib was inspired in some way, by the Harmony Korine's unfinished, unreleased projects called Fight Harm. Okay, it was a film that Harmony Korine was working on back in 1999. Fight Harm was this movie where Korine would get real-life footage with hidden cameras of him approaching people on the street and provoking them to fight him. And he had two rules, okay? One, he can only fight people that were bigger than him. The second rule was he can't throw the first punch. So, and I think there is some footage online. There's some footage of him wearing this like really goofy little outfit, and he has a banjo, and he's kind of acting like he's a little street performer, kind of busking on the street or something like that. But there, I did see some footage online of him, like, there's like this dude who looks, it's a dude with like thick, hairy forearms who's minding his own business, and he's having a coffee and a cigarette standing on the street. I think it's in New York. And you can't hear what it's saying. There's like music over it. I have no idea what he's saying to the guy, but you can tell he's like holding his banjo like he's gonna, like it's a bat, like he's gonna fucking hit him with it. And you can tell him, he's like talking shit to him. He's like, "What, motherfucker, what?" And the other guy is just like, look here, little man, like, you need to fucking fuck off and let me enjoy my coffee and cigarette. And he like slaps the dude's coffee out of his hand. And you know, it's never been released. So maybe someday it will. From what I understand, there's less than, I think, 10 minutes, 10 or 11 minutes of actual Fight Harm that was actually shot. Okay, so the footage is limited. And Korine suffered multiple trips to the emergency room with, I believe, a broken collarbone at one point and a shattered ankle. I don't know if that was during the same fight, and I'm sure a concussion or two. And oh god, and not to mention multiple arrests. I'm sure people were like, "Yeah, this crazy little fucker was trying to start a fight with me and hit me with a fucking banjo." I'm sure, you know, I'm gonna call the fucking cops because this is not cool. So from what I understand, he did get arrested several times, and I believe in an interview I saw with him that he was told by a judge that, look, there's a three strikes rule that if you get arrested again, you're going to go to prison for a long time. So between that and getting his ass beat several times, he's just like, you know what? Maybe this isn't the project for me. Which makes sense. You know, you can't fault him for that. And given how short a real fight is, gathering enough footage for a feature-length film is probably would have killed him. Really. Oh. Well, now I want to kind of pivot a little bit here. Because I've been watching a ton of stuff lately, and I don't think everything's going to end up on the show. Actually, I know a lot of it's not going to end up on the show, which is fine, but some of it I'll just kind of breeze through. I did go to it's called the Righteous Retro VHS Swap. I think that's the full name of it. If I'm getting it wrong, I apologize, but it's basically this, like, flea market, but it's for people who collect physical media, like VHSs, like VHS tapes and DVDs and Blu-rays and things sort of associated with that, like cool, you know, movie posters and, you know, toys and stuff like that. Actually, I scored a beautiful one sheet of the David Byrne True Stories film that was shot here in Texas. If you haven't seen True Stories, it's great. If you love the Talking Heads, if you love John Goodman, who doesn't love John Goodman? Well, maybe Roseanne. Roseanne doesn't like John Goodman right now because he totally threw her under the bus after her whole thing with the reboot of her show. But, I mean, but for the most part, John Goodman, fantastic. He's in True Stories. David Byrne's in True Stories. There's tons of Talking Heads music in it. I got a great poster from one of those kind of VHS swap meets. I also recently got, and this was kind of a impulse buy as I was walking out, DVD from the good people at Diamond Entertainment in Walnut, California, which is always a symbol of quality. Diamond Entertainment, I don't know, they basically put out movies that I imagine are, I don't know, the licensing on them is rather really dirt cheap, or it's public domain, I'm not exactly sure, but they put out, I mean, they put out the cheapest looking scans onto DVD of stuff. They don't enhance anything. They don't remaster, even though it says fully restored and enhanced digital masters. It's like, no, that's not what this is at all. What was it? I did a film review of The Black Gestapo several episodes ago. It's an exploitation film that combines sort of blaxploitation and Nazi-sploitation and makes it into one movie. It's basically this group that are kind of like the Guardian Angels, you know? They're basically this group of citizens that are kind of, they patrol and protect people in the hood, basically. But then at some point there's a power struggle, and then there's a breaking of ranks in this group, and one group becomes like, well, majority of the group becomes like neo-Nazis, but they're all black. And they live in this like lavish compound, and you know, there's one guy who sort of defects from the group, and then he kind of takes them down, you know. But that was also a Diamond Entertainment DVD release. But the one I got from the actual thing was this movie called Creature that, you know, if you look at the box, it's a picture of it's like a painting of an alien-like creature. And it says, it's been sleeping for 2,000 years. until now. And it says it stars Klaus Kinski. If you're familiar with Klaus Kinski, he's an insane maniac of a man. He's one of those guys who, you know, if you want to, I'm sure there's a university course somewhere of like the history of canceling white dudes. And I'm sure there's some accredited college that has that class. I'm willing to bet there's some type of class or some type of course where you can get a degree in canceling people. But Klaus Kinski is like never mentioned. You know what I mean? It's always like Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby and R. Kelly and James Franco and people like that. And, you know, maybe you hear every once in a while someone bring up like, I don't know, like Roman Polanski or someone like that. But you know who's not mentioned is, and who is way worse, is Klaus Kinski. He probably was bipolar, probably suffered from schizophrenia, but was like a sexual fucking predator in like the worst type of way. But also a fascinating actor. But this movie, Creature, like he's barely in it. He's in it for like, you know, a few minutes, and then it's just a bunch of random character actors just kind of doing the bulk of the work. But Creature is interesting because it's basically Alien. It's basically just a ripoff of Alien, but visually, like the sets, the ships look really great for the budget. You can tell that the budget wasn't quite Alien, but you know, I kind of looked into like who made the movie, and it actually had people who worked on Alien work on this film too. So, you know, the sets look pretty decent. The ships look really good. Every time there's sort of like an establishing shot, or you get a shot of like a ship taking off of an alien planet or something like that, like it looks great. It's sort of lacking in story. You know, it's basically, we're traveling through space, and we may have accidentally picked up an alien creature, and now it's picking us off one at a time, and we have to stop it and suck it out through an airlock before it murders all of us. That's Alien and Alien 2. But I don't know. I if you just like movies about alien creatures killing a bunch of people, and there's, you know, and they have to outsmart the alien at the end, if you like those types of movies, you know, like watch Creature. It's really not that bad. It's not that great. Like, I actually wrote this show with Creature in the background. And every time I looked up, I was like, oh, that looks kind of cool. I don't watch a ton of like sci-fi, like we have to kill the alien movies. I don't watch a lot of them, but you know, it's so, but this one was not bad, even though like the scan they did on this is pretty bad. It looks like it was ripped straight off of like a VHS tape that was a copy of a copy of a copy. But also, I've been watching and kind of enjoying, it's been sort of my go-to thing to watch before bed lately. Usually I watch Mystery Science Theater 3000 before bed. That's usually how I wind down at the end of an evening. But I've been watching a show that was around in the late 80s, and I think I think 88 to 90 the show ran, so it didn't run for very long, and that was a show called Freddy's Nightmares, A Nightmare on Elm Street, the series. Kind of a long title, because it's Freddy's Nightmares, : A Nightmare on Elm Street, : The series. I mean, they should have just called it A Nightmare on Elm Street, the series. You know, a similar thing was done with like the Friday the 13th, but there's like no Jason Voorhees in it. And actually, I haven't really watched a ton of the Friday the 13th series, but I don't know. It just kind of comes off like, I don't know, a slightly higher budgeted Tales from the Dark Side or something like that. It's like not quite as good as, I mean, any incarnation of the Twilight Zone at all. But it seems like it's, you know, production value wise, a little bit more than Tales from the Dark Side. But the stories in them are kind of whatever. You know, it's like if I'm going to watch something like that, I'm just going to watch the Twilight Zone. Or the Outer Limits. I'm going to watch the 80s Outer Limits. 80s and 90s Outer Limits is great. Go watch that. That's fun. But Freddy's Nightmares, A Nightmare on Elm Street, the series, I've been enjoying. It's been my kind of... It's not as good as the movies, obviously. But I do find them interesting. And I do find... that they gave a shit when they made these. They kind of went the route of Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits, where it's like you get sort of impressive directors to do these episodes. And so far, it's kind of hard to get a hold of these fucking things. But if anyone out there has copies of Freddy's Nightmares and Nightmare on Elm Street, the series, get in contact with me. Perhaps I'll buy them off you. But if you're going to gouge me on the price, then forget about it, because they're already expensive enough online, because they didn't print a lot. So the show was canceled and they didn't, you know. Maybe someday. I just assume everything will eventually get a Blu-ray release, because that seems to be the trend, you know, like the August Underground series has a Blu-ray release, you know, through, Unearth Films. And I pre-ordered mine, so that should be showing up any day now. So I can see a crisp Blu-ray copy of the August Underground. But, you know, Freddy's Nightmares... like the pilot episode was directed by Tobe Hooper of Texas Chainsaw Massacre fame. He also directed Funhouse and Poltergeist. But it's weird. There's like this weird thing in the world. If you just read old magazines about horror movies and books and you see interviews, it seems like there's this idea out in the world that Tobe Hooper hasn't directed anything. Or what he has directed is not that good. You know, it's like there's people out there who think he didn't even direct Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Okay, I'm getting into conspiracy right now. Okay, I'm totally entering the world tinfoil hat like territory right now. Because there's this, people think that he didn't direct Poltergeist. It was sort of like a co-production with him and Steven Spielberg. And people were like, well, that movie's way too good. It doesn't seem like a Tobe Hooper movie. It seems like a Steven Spielberg movie. But, I mean, I think he directed it. But, but anyways, you can go down that road if you want. But Tobe Hooper did the pilot episode for Freddy's Nightmares. And it basically sets up, it's basically a prequel episode. It sets up Freddy's sort of his who he was before he became this nightmare demon that goes after kids in their sleep and kills them. You know, it basically sets up that he was, you know, this is when he was still alive and human. You know, he gets caught because he was a bunch of kids and what's the name of the towns? It's not Springfield. I almost said Springfield. No, it's Springwood. Springwood, Ohio. Bunch of kids go missing, and then they find out that this guy, Freddy Krueger, has been abducting and killing kids, and he gets caught. He goes to trial, but I guess he wasn't at least according to the show, he wasn't read his rights when he was arrested. And because he was unaware of his rights when he was arrested, the entire case, even though they have evidence proving that he murdered all these children, he was not arrested correctly. And therefore, they had to throw the whole trial out, and he gets to walk. He gets set free on the spot. And then a group of, basically a lynch mob of citizens and parents of the dead children. And in the show, it's, you know, a local cop chased down Freddy Krueger to this like warehouse that has a boiler room in it. They track him down and they light him on fire and they kill him. And then after that, Freddy Krueger's like spirit goes into this weird, it's like this purgatory where he's like has 1 foot on Earth and 1 foot in this kind of supernatural realm. But basically, he's going to continue to kill, but he can't do it in reality. So he has to do it when people go to sleep. And you know the story of Freddy Krueger. But I'm just saying that that's what the pilot episode was. It was just a prequel story to Friday the 13th. And, I thought it was decent. You know, it's also, you have to kind of think about the time that this was made. This was 88. So this actually came out in October of 88. So, you know, it's up until that point, what do you have? Okay, you have A Nightmare on Elm Street's 84. Freddy's Revenge is 85. Nightmare on Elm Street 3, The Dream Warriors 87. And in 88, The Dream Master comes out. Nightmare on Street Part 4 comes out in August. So that comes out in August. And then the TV show. Okay, I had it backwards. The TV show comes out in October. So that was the time to be, I mean, I can't even like Freddy Krueger was so fucking popular at the time. And I remember it vividly. There's certain things from my childhood I remember quite vividly. Like, I don't remember most of school. You know, there's a lot of TV shows, movies I know I saw, but I don't remember. But A Nightmare on Elm Street, the first Nightmare on Elm Street I saw was part two. I saw two first, and then, you know, and then I had to go back and watch one. And then, I mean, I was hooked ever since. So, you know, and my mom didn't, it's not that she didn't give a fuck. It was just not even like a consideration of like, should I be showing this to my kid? It was just like, Mom, I want to see that. And she's like, okay. I think she just looked at Freddy Krueger and saw a colorful sweater and just like, what is this? Okay. Go ahead and watch it. So we rented Nightmare on Elm Street movies from the video store all the time. And I can't even I saw Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare in theaters. I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I did. So I never saw the first five movies in theaters or anything like that, but I did see, I don't know, how come I didn't see any of the Friday the 13th. Why didn't I see any of the Nightmare on Elm Street in theaters? That's weird. Because I did see RoboCop in theaters. But basically, that like 84 to 88 when the show came out, it's just like Freddy Krueger was as big as anything. I can't even think of anything that would be bigger. I don't know, like maybe Walking Dead. Because kids, like, I work in a barbershop, and there's a lot of kids who like The Walking Dead, which is surprising to me. Like, The Walking Dead's really big, and then there's Fear of the Walking Dead. So it's a franchise that just keeps going and going and going. They haven't made a single movie, but It's super popular, but I can't think of anything that was a movie that also made a show that was like that. You know, because, I mean, if you think of modern day stuff, it's not like... I don't know. There's, I can't compare it to anything really. You know, I have seen like little kids dressed up as like Art the Clown from Terrifier, you know, but it's not like Terrifier is, it's not like Art the Clown is Freddy Krueger. Like Terrifier is not making millions and millions of dollars at the box office and, you know, has his own TV show or anything like that. You know, it was a really unique, special time. And, yeah, I would definitely, if you can get a hold of, if you go to, archive.org, you'd be surprised the type of stuff you can find there. And that's, I found the whole first season of, Freddy's Nightmares on, archive.org. If you want to check them out, they're fun. The quality is a little fucked up, but it's fine. It's fine. I'm used to watching fucked up quality stuff anyways. So, I don't know. I can, my eyes can adjust to it. What else? There was a... this is another just hard pivot. I was talking to somebody about... Oh, God. Okay. So, we have like a little... We have kind of like movie nights at the house. Okay. And... we watched this documentary about this guy. I'm totally blanking on the name of it, but basically it's this guy who infiltrates the KKK. And it was something to the effect of there was members of the KKK who wanted to kill this black gentleman. And this guy who wasn't even a cop, he was like foreign military sniper or something like that, but they basically the police had him go undercover into the KKK, and he was sort of posing as like a hitman, and they wanted to basically kill this black dude, and they basically hired this guy to kill this black guy. So they, you know, they have like recordings of them basically being like, he's like, so let me get this straight. You want me to kill this dude? You want me to completely get rid of him and, you know, and do it for the KKK gods and stuff like that? And they're like, yes, that's what we want you to do. He's like, okay, just making sure that's exactly what you want me to do. And then, you know, they put the black dude into protective custody and, oh, I remember what it was. The black dude was in, he was incarcerated. Okay, he was in this prison, and there was a bunch of guards in the prison that were KKK members. And something happened where he got into an altercation with one of the guards who was a KKK member and, like, beat him up. So the guards basically put a hit out on the black dude. So they actually waited for him to, because I guess the guy was going to get released from prison. They waited for him to get released so that he can get killed on the outside. And that's when, you know, that's when they sent in the undercover guy, and the undercover guy was like, yeah, I'll kill this guy. I'll find out where he lives and blah, blah, blah. And so they put the black dude in protective custody, and they're like, look, these people are trying to fucking kill you. So what we're going to do is we're going to stage a, they took a photo of the guy. They're like, we're going to stage a photo of you looking like I killed you. So the guy's like laid on the ground, and he's kind of contorted on the ground, and it, and the funny part is they're like, here, let me pour whatever the guy was drinking. He's like, here, let me just pour it on your dick. So it looked like when he died, he pissed himself. And the guy took like a Polaroid of it and then took it to the guys who sort of contracted the hit. And he's like, yeah, I took care of that thing. Here's the picture. And they were like, wow, good job. Good job, brother. And, you know, that was enough evidence to take down all these KKK guys who were trying to get this, you know, this fucking, I mean, it's it's not like the dude was like a completely innocent guy. You know what I mean? The guy was kind of a career criminal, and he's been in and out of prison. But he didn't deserve to be killed. You know what I mean? And that's sort of the documentary makes that point. Like, the guy didn't deserve to be killed, you know, for, you know, getting into a dust up with some Klan guard at a prison. But, you know, that documentary sucked. Actually, I didn't like it. I didn't like how it was presented. And, this was my whole point. So there used to be a lot of, like, documentaries about white nationalists and Ku Klux Klan guys and Nazi skinheads and, like, back in the day, because that stuff was, like, around, you know what I mean? There was the whole, like, Geraldo Rivera show where he got hit in the face and his nose broken by some skinhead guy, and, you know what I mean? And there was, there was actual neo-Nazi street gangs back in the day, and like that was a thing. So people made movies about it, like American History X, and you know, but I don't know, like I just feel like that documentary was put through the lens of like the modern day, and I don't know, it just seems lame. it was lame, and I don't know. It didn't really show the humanity of the victims, and it didn't really show the humanity of the actual, you know, racist guys, you know. And I think you should show that. You should not just see these people as like racist monsters who believe, you know, about, they believe these things about ethnic cleansing and Hitler was awesome and all that sort of thing. It's like, you need to see them as human beings. You know what I mean? That's why like American History X is so good. You know what I mean? It's not just about this racist street thug guy who, you know, ended up going to prison and turning his life around. Like you see that, you see his transformation from this fucking horrible racist guy to a guy who can turn it all around, you know? And there are documentaries like that. Well, there was one from like 2011. There was this documentary called Erasing Hate. And it was about like, this like white power skinhead guy who basically he turns his life around. He kind of becomes reformed, and I think he ends up marrying a woman of color, actually. That's pretty cool. But his whole thing is that he had like all these racist tattoos all over his body and all over his face and head. And then during the documentary, he's getting all these tattoos slowly over time removed. It's very painful, and eventually he gets them all removed and he grows his hair out and realizes there's more to life than hating brown and black people and gays. And so, you know, and it's pretty short. It's like 45 minute documentary. So, and but I was trying to find this documentary that I know Michael Moore worked on before he became like, you know, before he did Roger and Me and became Michael Moore, it was this documentary called Blood in the Face. And I remember watching Blood in the Face. I remember renting it from like Blockbuster or something like that. Because even as a kid, I was into documentaries. Maybe it was Hollywood Video. I don't remember where, but I know I've rented that documentary several times because. But it was basically this documentary that allowed this documentary film crew into the sort of these like white nationalist, like Klan member groups, sort of events that they would have and public speech events and things like that. And a lot of the guys in the movies are like older dudes, you know what I mean? They're probably all dead at this point. but they came from the sort of the that era between the 40s and the 60s where there was still like the Klan was thriving, you know what I mean? And you know, guys like George Lincoln Rockwell were out there just kind of stirring up fucking hate, you know what I mean? Like people who, and George Lincoln Rockwell was a guy who sort of modeled himself after like Hitler. You know, it's like that's how America was back in the day. And even when you get to Blood in the Face, like Blood in the Face is like you see these groups and their numbers are greatly diminished. Like over time, just being like for racial purity, like it just doesn't hold up over time. You know what I mean? It's not a it's not a sustainable ideology. Okay, so but when I don't know, just nowadays when I see people just throw around terms like racist and you know, white supremacists and you know nationalists, it's like it's almost a disservice. I'd go as far as to say it's a disservice to actual white nationalists and racists because they're mischaracterizing them because they don't know anything about them. They're just like, oh, this person's racist, that person's racist. But it's like, yeah, know thy enemy, people, okay? There are some groups still out there in the United States, well, all over the world, but in the United States there are little clusters, little cells of, you know, Nazi skinhead guys and Klan dudes and people who were like, you know, Viking Norse mythology type fucking guys, you know, that they're like, here, look at this stone tablet. It says that fucking Jesus was a white man and people like that. Yeah, they're still out there. But if you look at the totality of the history of those type of people in the United States, like as time goes on, they're just burning off like cordwood. Okay. They're just not with, I think people would really benefit from watching some of these older documentaries about like the Klan and skinheads and shit like that, because it's just not what it used to be. You know, it's like people act like it's, there's the Klan is at your front door. And I'm sure there's some small towns in America where the Klan are literally at people's front door, but it's certainly not in major metropolitan liberal cities. You know, I just don't like when people ignore the history of things, because it's one thing to ignore history from the past, but it's like those people also tend to not see or just flat out ignore history happening in the present. You know what I mean? I don't know. But yeah, I watched Blood in the Face. I had to find it on BitChute. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I felt like a fucking psycho looking for this fucking racist documentary from fucking a million years ago. But I ended up finding it on BitChute. If you're not familiar with BitChute, like, here you go. You want to see a fucking time capsule? Because like the internet is so now. Everything is now. There's no, you know, there's no point in which we reflect on, oh, do you remember, remember Twitter a year ago? Like no one has those conversations, but YouTube, like early YouTube and LiveLeak and websites like that, it was, God, even MySpace, anyone could post anything on there. It was crazy. And I would say that if you want to kind of feel and sort of experience, if you want to see it for yourself, if you want to experience what, you know, the internet circa 2001 was like. Go to BitChute. If you want to know where all the crazy racist people are, like, if you want to see where real dangerous conspiracy theorists, and I will make a distinction between conspiracy theorists and dangerous conspiracy theorists, are, go to BitChute. Those people are there, and they're making videos, okay? And they're posting them, and it'll blow your mind. It'll blow your mind. You know? If you're listening to this and you're like a writer on a TV show, or you're a showrunner, or you're making movies or short films or something, like, and you need to find material that's new and different, because it seems like everything has been beaten to death. Everything's rather a remake or just building on an existing property that's already been beaten to death. Like, you need something fresh and cutting edge, go to BitChute. There are people on there. If you need inspiration for a character, go to BitChute. Especially, it's like, there are straight up crazy people on BitChute, and it's very entertaining. It's very entertaining. But that's where I found Blood in the Face. So, I don't know. It's weird, because it's like, we live in a time now where people of color are, you know, we ran out of racists, basically. We ran out of, and not just specifically white racists, okay? Because you can be racist and not be white, in case you didn't know that. Like, we ran out of white racists, and now we just look around at who else is around, and we call black people white racists now. We call Mexicans white racists. Like, that's a thing. And if you're getting your panties in a bunch about that, then you need to relax, okay? I'm your friend. It's okay. But it's just, you know, like, the upside is, like, documentaries about white supremacists, real white supremacists, like, that's going away. That won't exist, you know, in the near future. You know, so there's it's really fun to see the progress we've made collectively as people, and everyone's at each other's throats, and everything is so divided nowadays, seemingly divided. But I think that as divided as we definitely are, I'd say there's a lot of progress has been made too, you know, and now I think we're at a point now where we're so comfortable that we're just going after each other for fun. You know what I mean? It's not like, you know, it's not like we're standing up to some great oppressor anymore. You know, or we're standing up against some horrible injustice. We're just going after each other because we don't have the great oppressor to go after. And there are great oppressors out there, but no one goes after them in any meaningful way with real numbers and real resistance. But that's where we're at today. We're too busy, you know, doing watching TikTok videos and watching catching up on Righteous Gemstones and watching reruns of Freddy's Nightmares in like 144p on archive.com.org. That's what we're doing. And that's fine. I'd rather be doing that than killing my neighbor in the street or something. Anyways, oh my God, this whole episode went down a dark path, didn't it? Well, you know what? I'm just going to cut it off right there, guys, because I have to do somebody else's show here in a little bit. But thank you so much for listening. And if you want to keep up with me on all the social media stuff, you can go over to Instagram. I'm at skeleton_factory. That's where I'm primarily at. You can send all your hate mail there. I'm also on Twitter at SFPodcastATX. And you could support the show at patreon.com/skeletonfactory. And there's a bunch of free stuff on Patreon. Okay? So just know that you get a whole bunch more free stuff on Patreon. And, you can support the show while you're there. Well, I'll see you guys on the next one. This has been the Skeleton Factory Podcast. Rescuing your movie night, one movie at a time. I am Adam. Bye-bye.